Now you've
don't,
got,
don't say you're ready when you're not ready.
Now you've got me all here. Are you gonna?
You can't even let that last note reverberate. You're just a bam.
Are you gonna keep that first bit in where you're yelling at me all angrily with cruelty?
Was that cruelty? You said you were ready, and then
when you raise your voice to me, it's abusive. I find it abusive.
Is it a trigger?
It triggers me. It's a shrink into a. A tiny bruised flower. People don't understand how delicate I am.
Yes. They never know what to look at.
I am. Well, you know, I've had to...
toughen up your exterior.
Toughen up my exterior.
To protect the orchid to inside. Protect,
yeah. I'm a very fragile, you know. My existence is... really, really tenuous.
You're made of sponge sugar.
Things could go off at any moment. It's true. This is a linoleum knife.
Yes, it is.
This is a podcast of the cinema.
It's that too.
I am the Steel Magnolia.
Your favorite movie.
A movie I've only really seen in chunks. Like... not sitting down from start to finish, have I ever watched Steel Magnolias?
I saw it start to finish when it originally opened, and not since. But I've never felt compelled to sit through it all again. But we know enough people.
Well, the gays ruined it for me. I don't know that I could watch it from start to finish now. You know, as an objective person, and not be like, you know,
I have nothing necessarily against Steel Magnolias or Golden Girls. Or Mean Girls, or Drop Dead Gorgeous.
I like Mean Girls a lot. That was a good movie.
But I am sick of
Drop Dead Gorgeous is not a good movie.
I'm sick of people quoting them all the time.
Drop Dead Gorgeous is not a good movie.
It's not terrible. It's
kind of terrible.
It's
half-assedly funny in parts.
Anybody who comes and tells me how much they love Drop Dead Gorgeous, I always ask, have you seen Smile?
Exactly.
Until you've seen Smile... don't talk to me about Drop Dead Gorgeous.
Yeah, never talk to me.
I'll be standing over there while you go watch Smile, and then you come back.
And then never talk to me.
And then continue not talking to me. Not true.
I'm Dave White of Movies.com fame, and you are Alonzo Duraldi of The Rap and What the Flick notoriety.
In fame.
And
this week I am of Outfest.
And we're both in a hurry. This is going to be short and snappy today, in spite of that opening where we didn't talk anything about the introduction or cinemas.
It's a podcast on the cinema. On the cinema.
You are Outfest this weekend, and I am the Los Angeles Biennial.
Yeah.
The Biennale.
The Biennale.
Of Los Angeles.
I was on that line in grief about my work was accepted into the Laguna Biennale.
The Los Angeles Biennial at the Hammer Museum called Made in L.A. Mm-hmm. Doing a thing today. Anybody listening to this right now, unless you listen to it the second... are you posting this today?
No, I'll post it. It's going to go up Sunday.
It's going to go up Sunday. Well, it's a day late.
This already happened.
This already happened. I'm fixing to go... to the Hammer and be on K Chung Radio, K-CHUNG. It's a little art radio station.
Are you sure it's not K Chung Radio?
I don't know. I'll ask Mr. Jungle Guts today.
You do that.
How that works. I will be in deep conversation with a man named Johnny Jungle Guts. at the Hammer Museum today at 12:30.
Of course you are.
We're going to be talking about cinema and my critical practice.
And keep practicing. One day you'll get it right.
I'm going to use that expression at least once during the conversation. I'd like to discuss my critical practice with you, Mr. Jungle Guts.
And your personal aesthetic.
He sent me a video of himself. Not that kind of video. He sent me a video of himself singing an acoustic guitar version of Cher's Believe at his CalArts graduation ceremony, during which he stripped from a suit into a Wonder Woman outfit.
All righty.
So this guy's a lot of fun.
Okay.
Johnny Jungle Guts. He's also extremely tall.
Well, I'll be thinking about you at the L.A. Biennale when I'm at the Venice Biennale.
Now, is the Venice Film Festival part of the Biennale?
Yes.
It is?
It is.
Are you going to do any of the art stuff just for me, for my sake?
I don't know if I'm going to have time. We haven't really talked about this in the show. I'm covering the Venice Film Festival this year. I'm going for like the first 4 or 5 days.
I thought you were going to be gone for like over a week.
No, I have to be back in time for my new gig.
I seriously thought you were going to be gone for like 10 days.
No. The festival's 10 days. I'm only going for 4 or 5.
Oh.
Yeah, but anyway, so that's exciting. And yeah, they do a real Biennale there, so, you know.
Well, this is a real thing here. And it's a very cool one, too, because they focus on underrepresented and emerging artists from Los Angeles, from the Los Angeles area. And I think that's great because, you know, you can go to a biennial or a biennale, depending on what country you're in. And if you are, you know, a person who really enjoys contemporary art, you know the names of these people who are showing. Mm-hmm. You generally know most of those names because you follow it.
Right.
If you're a weirdo and you follow this stuff, because that's, I mean, this is my whatever obscure interest you have where you know all the facts about something, this is mine. Mm. And so I would love to go with you to Venice, not just because that city is sinking and is going to be gone in the next 20 years.
Now or never.
But also to go to the art side of the thing while you're watching all the movies.
I say, I'll be there for work, so I don't know what kind of free time I'll have to go look at your foolishness. But, you know, mainly I'm there to see movies and write about them. So
yeah. Well, that's your job.
Yeah. And they just announced this week their opening night film is Birdman, the new...
Remind me what that
new
is.
New Iñárritu movie with Michael Keaton.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That guy gives me an
ache.
An itch. Like, more like a rash. Because a rash is a thing that is a constant irritation.
Right.
And his films have become that for me.
I have not been a giant fan yet, but I'm hearing good things about this one, so who knows.
All right. Okay. So I did my job a couple weeks ago, and I went to a teeny tiny, teeny, teeny, tiny little screening room.
Mm. You were in like the Anne Frank screening room, right? Like it's an attic of a building?
Yes. I'm not going to talk about whose screening room it was.
No.
I'm not going to talk about who set up the screening.
No.
I'm not going to talk about the names of anyone I had any conversations with before or after this screening.
Because they are faultless.
Because neither this company nor these people are to blame for the insanity that went down. I was in a 12-seat screening room. 12 seats.
Two rows of six.
We have rich friends who live in the Hollywood Hills whose personal home screening rooms...
Seats more than that.
Seat more than 12 people. And whose screen in their personal home screening room is bigger than this place is. But I was there to see...
They were at Outfest yesterday, by the way.
Who?
Our screening room friends.
Which ones?
The homeowners.
Oh, the homeowners. Yes. The friends who live in the hills with the screening room. Okay.
Yes.
And a sweet-ass swimming pool that no one ever goes in. And I keep threatening to go over there and jump cannonball naked.
Well, we're only
all nudishly.
We're only ever there at night.
Into there. I would do it at night.
I'm sure on a hot afternoon that
I would do it at night, you know, at the bad movie nights that they host in front of everyone. I don't care. I would do it.
Bring trunks.
You know me. I got to be free. I got to be free to spread out.
All right. So 12 seat screening room.
12 seat screening room. I'm there to see Monica Mana. Now, Monica Mana is a really beautiful ethnographic documentary. Now, ethnographic documentary just means that they took their camera and they pointed it at a group of people, you know, doing something very specific to their culture. And frequently, these are specific cultural moments that don't get cameras pointed at them. Mm-hmm. No. So, Monica Mana is from Stephanie Spray, and oh no, the guy's last name is Velez.
Way to be prepared.
Yeah, I know. Pacho Velez. I really wanted to get the names out there because they're my two new favorite people, because I love this damn movie so much. I have now seen it twice, as a matter of fact, and we'll discuss that second viewing as well. But they took their camera and they put it in a cable car in Nepal. Now, this cable car goes up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of feet over hills, mountains, farmland,
villages,
all the way to the top of a hill where there is a temple, the Monica Mana Temple, where people go to worship a Hindu goddess annually, maybe once in their whole lifetime. Now, back in the day, people used to walk this trip. It took people like 3 days to walk this trip. But now they've got a cable car that takes you there in approximately 15 minutes. Or 11 minutes. Or I think it's specifically 11 minutes because 11 minutes is the length of a roll of 16-millimeter film. Mm. So they took a 16-millimeter camera, put it permanently, like fixed it.
Locked down
in this cable car, and pointed it at people getting in the cable car and taking the ride to the top of the hill, to the temple. So the entire movie is... The first half is people going up the hill. The second half is people going down the hill. Now, it's a variety of people. It's like 11 or 12 different groups of passengers. Some of them are solo. Some of them are in groups of two or three. And whatever happens in the cable car is what you see in the film. And, in fact, one of the cable cars they put it in was a freight car. And it's just goats. Going up. Now, the goats go up to the hill, but they don't come down, if you know what I mean. This is a temple where sometimes people bring animals for use.
There is a goat with his ass is pointing at the camera in the direct center of the yes. frame. I was reminded of that guy who took all those Wes Anderson shots and did the little dotted line down the middle for the symmetry.
So what you're saying is that you've not read my review yet on the linoleum-knife.com, have you?
I did, but I've forgotten it already.
I said it was as perfectly centered as any Kubrick composition. Yeah. I don't think you read it.
I read it.
Yeah, now you might need to go back and reread it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
No, once was plenty.
Maybe you need to go back and rewatch this film.
No.
Okay, so I'm watching the movie, this formally perfect film. Perfectly balanced. This sort of anticipatory first half of people traveling up, and you get little bits and pieces of information about what they are doing, because nobody, no voiceover narration, no one person in a cable car explains what they are doing.
No title card that would just tell you, by the way, here's what you're going to spend the next 2 hours looking at and why.
But bit by bit, the passengers tell you what's happening. That you learn that they are in Nepal. You learn that they are going to a temple. You learn that occasionally animals are sacrificed at the temple. You learn what people wear. You learn why they go. You learn how important it is to people. And how, especially for the women who go there. I'm not sure why. Maybe it's because it's a female goddess, or who knows why. But for the women in the film, they seem to really feel it a lot more than everybody else who's going. They talk, some of the women talk about how it's like their lifelong dream to go to the temple, and how they, back in the day, they wouldn't have been able to make the trip because it just takes so long. And now they're so grateful for the cable car, and it's like this miracle. One of them calls it a miracle. And then the second half, they go down, people who have visited. And it's never the same folks except for one couple who come second or third in line in the going up process, and are, they finish the movie. There's not a lot of dialogue, and the first bits of dialogue don't come until about 20 minutes into the film, 25 minutes into the film.
Yeah, the first two sets of passengers
are absolutely silent. They don't say a word. And by the end of the first trip, you're like, is anyone going to talk in this movie? And then by the end of the second trip, you're like, seriously, is anybody going to talk in this movie?
Well, and not then, even just that, you're thinking, wait, is this entire movie going to be in the cable car?
And then you think, is this whole movie just shots of people in this cable car? And it's, and here's the thing, it's not boring at all. It's it's this beautifully absorbing visual experience, because what you're getting is this sort of travelogue of these hills and mountains and villages and stuff behind them as they go up. And frankly, a touch of anxiety for me.
Ah, well.
As I was watching it, thinking, oh God, every time they come over those support support poles and there's that transfer thing, the ka-chunk, chunk, 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 and the whole car just rumbles, I just thought, oh, I would never go to this temple. You will never have me in that cable car. Because that's just too high up and too... No. that will not happen to me in my life. I'm content to watch a documentary about other people.
I don't know that I would necessarily hop onto a Nepalese cable car. In general, they don't bother me.
I don't know. I might need convincing or sedation or something, but that would kind of ruin the experience, too.
I suppose so, yes.
So
tell the story about the 12-person screen.
So anyway, this is a beautiful film. It's just, I've seen it twice. The second time is even better than the first. It's not boring for one second, in spite of what certain co-hosts of this podcast might want you to believe, and they are wrong
We'll get to your second screening. Finish talking about the first one.
So people start walking out after about 20 minutes.
Right.
Okay. And during that 20 minutes of people walking out, mind you, 12 seats in the screening room. There are 11 people in the screening room. And people start walking out one by one and not coming back. And then there's a lady behind me, an older lady and her older lady friend, and they are talking. Talking to each other.
Whispering or talking?
Talking.
Oy.
And they get shushed once by who, I don't know. But I'm giving them three strikes.
Right.
After the first shush, one of them, 5 minutes later, gets up and goes to look at the thermostat in the screening room because she is cold. Because she's 100. Guess what, old people? It's like Sarah Silverman said. It's not cold in here. You're dying. I didn't make that up. She said it.
Bring a wrap.
Bring a coat or a jacket or a sweater or a shawl. You're old. You have a shawl.
A pashmina.
Bring a shawl. Yeah. So she tries to fiddle with the thermostat. She can't. Thank God she can't, because she doesn't know what she's doing and there's no outer control. Like, you've got to have the... You know,
right.
You've got to be the boss at the place to fix that. Then she walks out. 5 minutes later, she comes back with a giant thing of popcorn. Because downstairs, there is popcorn available for people who want it. She comes back with a big thing of popcorn. I was like, yeah, sure. Settle in. Have some popcorn. I understand that this film requires your patience, that you have not yet decided to give it. Have your popcorn. She talks again with her friend.
Ugh.
She gets shushed again by like two or three people this time.
I love the notion that if a movie's not in English, that gives you license to just talk over it. Because the audio doesn't matter.
Well, but and also very few people in the film are actually talking.
True.
And when they are talking, it's in Nepalese. Right. Yeah.
Who needs silence? So anyway, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Finally. She'd had her strike too, and I was just waiting. They do it again. And this time, seriously, everyone shushes them, including a very big and well-known film critic for a major newspaper. Because I saw this person, as I whipped my head around, I saw this person shushing. And after the shush, and they were all like, meh, I decided I was going to speak. And I said, you. And you, shut up.
To the 100-year-old lady.
I don't care. I said, that's right, you and you, stop talking. I said, you are old enough to know how to behave in a theater, and I'm here to work. I don't know what you're here for, but I'm here to do my job, not to listen to you jaw on and on and on and on, you chatter. Quit it. And then I stared at them. Because that's really my specialty.
That's your closer. Yeah.
People think that my voice and my aggression is how I get the job done. But what I really am best at is after I scold, I hold the stare. Because I'm not afraid. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid of the bad person who has done the bad thing in the movie theater. I stare them down. They're going to blink first.
Yes. You're not shaming me. I'm shaming
not
you.
Not me. Exactly. I'm not the one who should feel embarrassed about what I just did. You are a terrible human being. So I just kept looking. And then I turned around. And they didn't want to see. I know what was going through their head. They weren't like, well, he's not going to push us out of here. So they waited another 5 minutes, and then they got up and walked out, both of them.
Just so you'd know.
Just so you know that they had decided. They
did, yes.
Because the movie was so bad, they had to go. Now, after they left, several more people walked out over the course of the running time. By the time the movie was over, of the 11 people who showed up, there were 5 left.
9 passengers and a crew of 11.
5 people left in the screening room. Which... that also blows my mind, because this was a press screening of a tiny, tiny, tiny little micro release. I'm talking about a movie put out by Cinema Guild.
One city at a time.
Cinema Guild specializes in this sort of thing.
Oh, by the way, did
and
you hear...
And it goes from one place to another.
Did you hear what Cinema Guild picked up this week?
Los Angeles Plays Itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
So people can finally see that movie.
Stoked. I've seen that 3 times. Yeah. It's so damn good.
We'll talk about that more when it finally gets a national release, so, or whatever release it's getting.
Cinema Guild puts out this kind of movie. Tiny little releases.
It's not like they recruited people in a mall. These are people who came to this movie because
by
they're
invitation,
film writers.
Because they are in the media somehow. They're writers or journalists or, you know, film people of some sort or other. You know, they came to this voluntarily. They're on an invite list.
Yeah, and nobody coming to this thing is like going to go do the junket or work the red carpet at Monica Mano.
Yeah,
like it's the you knew what you were getting into, sort of.
By the way, if you live in Austin,
is that the next stop?
It was there. It's there tomorrow night, or rather tonight. If you are listening to this on Sunday, July 13th. Mm-hmm. The Austin Film Society is screening Monica Mana today. It's going to be in Massillon, Ohio on the 25th of July and Rochester, New York on the 29th of July. I just wanted to let you know that, and we're going to post the link,
on the page.
So if you're in Massillon, Ohio or Rochester, New York, you get to see this movie this month. You get to see this movie this month on a screen without walking out and complaining. Okay, so... the screening ends. I go down to my car and I get a phone call. I get a phone call from one of the people who organized the screening. And I'm thinking, why is this happening? And then I think, I know why this is happening. I pick up the phone and I go, "Hey, man, have I got a story for you?" He goes, "I've got a story for you. They complained about you after they left." And I was like, they said that they were treated very rudely by other people in the theater. I said, not by other people in the theater. I don't want anyone else to get the credit. I want it to be known that I'm the one that scolded them and shouted them down and told them to shut up and everything else that they probably are mortified by right now. Tell them I never want to see their faces in a screening again, and they should never come back, and they should quit their jobs doing whatever it is they do regarding films like this, and they should never bother another human being as long as they live, which probably won't be much longer. They should just stay home."
And to which he responded,
"We're going to find out exactly who it was and take them off the invite list." I said, "That's a good first step."
Nice.
And so so then I was so excited about this movie that I took you to see it. Mm-hmm. And I refused. I forbade you from reading any reviews or knowing anything about the film before we went.
Uh-huh.
And then we went, and you were so happy that I took you to see it. The end. That's my story.
I was into it for a while. I got about the second or third passenger, I was like, oh, wow, this whole movie is just going to be this.
That's
okay,
right.
Well, that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
And then after about the first 10 of these vignettes, I was like,
come on, the three metalhead teenagers with the kitten, weren't they great?
I liked the metalhead teenagers. I liked the goats. I liked the
goats. When the goats came on, when the goats come on the screen, you look at me and you start laughing. And I held my arms up like in victory. I was like, yes, goats for 11 minutes. Here comes goats.
You know, I like the two old ladies trying to eat ice cream.
Their ice cream eating game was lackluster.
And the first old ladies I've ever seen that didn't carry wet naps in their purse.
That old lady, well, do they carry wet naps in Nepal?
No,
they might.
Might not be a thing. Right. I don't know. But these but two did
she
not
did
have
not know it. How to eat an ice cream bar. These two old ladies on the way down,
yeah,
they're so happy. They bought ice cream at the temple, and they're eating their ice cream bars on the way down. And
of course
they're
it's
getting
melting.
The ice cream all over themselves, and it's melting, and they're laughing because it's melting all over them. And yet, they refuse to try eating the food, the ice cream any faster than what they're doing. Like, they keep just, the old one especially, just keeps kind of like,
yeah.
like kind of half
kind
sucking
of
on the end.
It,
like,
know.
I don't like, go faster!
It's hot in Nepal!
It's hot in Nepal! You're losing the ice cream. It's going all over the floor, along with whatever chicken blood and goat poop is already down there.
Well, now, the goats were in a separate carrier. They weren't in the human...
No, I know. But the one guy holding the rooster, he was in that same
it's
car.
True, yeah.
Yeah. And on the way back, on his trip down, that goat is... That chicken's upside down.
Yeah, he's holding it by the feet.
Holding by the feet, upside down. That thing is...
D-E-D.
Bled out. Yeah.
But after a while, I just kind of lost patience with it. And here's the thing. There's not a
what
single...
What does that say about you?
Well,
hang
What's
on. Wrong with
no,
you?
No. This movie does not have like a single title card
That's
telling
right.
you anything.
It's a mystery. You have to figure out the mystery with all the little parts.
Also, you made me see it after a long day at the office.
Yes.
It was like the week before Outfest started.
What a beautiful refresher.
So we're like...
To let your mind
running
go,
around crazy,
to let your mind
getting,
go off to this
dealing with
serene
a million details.
Place of greenery
I had other movies
beauty.
I needed to see. I hadn't seen Snowpiercer yet. But no.
Snowpiercer's fine.
2 solid hours of ethnography.
The best!
If you had got me in a better mood, and if you had allowed me to know something going in,
the
I might
best.
Have been more into it.
I didn't know anything going in. My first time, I didn't know anything going in. And I almost regret telling people about the film, because I want everyone to have that same, like, magical discovery experience
yeah, no,
that I
you
had.
Didn't know. Take it from someone you inflicted that upon. It's better to know.
It is so good. It is so, so good. You have to see this movie. Everyone must see this film.
I like the first 2/3 or so, and I think if I were in the right mood, I'd have liked the whole thing. But I was just tired, and I got sick of it. So, yeah. Thanks, Dave White.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about
You're welcome.
Let's talk about a movie that people might actually get to see this week.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes. Cut to grease while you do dishes. It is the follow-up to Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Good joke, Alonzo Duralde. Yes. It's a very good joke.
I'm Logi. I'm fighting off a head cold, and I'm in the middle of a film festival.
Plus, I just gave you a really amazing breakfast.
You did. It's true.
We're taping this early in the morning, recording it. We're not taping it. We're recording this early in the morning, and I just made maybe the most kick-ass hash browns of your life.
Arguably so, yes.
I got those potatoes, and I box-grated them.
Mm-hmm.
And I squozed out all the excess water and starchy bits.
Right.
I fried up bacon in the pan, took the bacon out, hash browned the potatoes in the bacon fat, cut up some scallions,
right,
grated some sharp cheddar cheese, and crumbled those pieces of bacon on top of it.
It was real nice.
It's real nice.
Thank you, Esquire magazine, for that recipe.
Well, it's a recipe that you can memorize in 3 seconds and never have to look at the recipe again.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Ooh. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. It's pretty good. I really like it. I liked it more than you.
You did, and I didn't dislike it.
You merely liked it a lot.
I merely like it, and it's weird because I feel like I'm surrounded by a...
You should die and go to hell.
Clearly, a critical establishment right now that loves it. And, of course, idiot... What the Flick commenters who somehow misunderstood me saying that...
And you refused to stop reading them.
This was too funny. I was enjoying it. You don't like it because other people like it now? What kind of hipster are you?
They're idiots. It's the ones who thought that you didn't like it.
Perhaps you should listen to what I actually
paying
said.
Paying attention to what you
which
were
is
saying,
that I feel weird because I merely like the movie when everybody else loves it. And so that's
somehow... So by contrast, it appears that you
I'm being negative.
Some kind of hater.
No, I liked it. I just, I wanted more out of it. It's set 10 years after the simian flu outbreak that happens at the end of the previous film.
Yes.
And the apes are living in the woods in Marin County on the other end of the Golden Gate Bridge.
Teaching themselves to read and write and speak.
Yeah, and they live peacefully. Ape shall not kill ape, and they have like tree
houses. They haven't gotten to shall yet.
No, ape not kill ape.
Ape not kill ape.
Meanwhile, what's left of humanity, or at least a cluster of what's left of humanity, is hunkered down in the ruins of San Francisco, and they are running out of energy for electricity and whatnot. And
can
so
you
they,
see my computer screen, by the way?
No.
Okay, good.
Why, are you Christmas shopping?
No, I'm looking at a thing that you, it's a secret.
Oh, fine.
Yeah.
Anyway, they want to, the humans.
It might be about Christmas.
It would be good.
I do that all year, Christmas. As you know.
I know. Look, after June 30th, it's like I should be playing Christmas music already. We're already in the Christmas half of the year. But I'll wait.
You need to calm down. Go about your business privately, if that's what you
want. I'm not doing that, all right. I assure you. I would tell you if I were. Anyway, so the humans want to access this dam that is out in ape territory. To get their generators going again.
Sorry.
And so when the apes and humans come face to face for the first time, it's already kind of a disaster. One of the humans accidentally shoots one of the apes. But nonetheless, Caesar, played by Andy Serkis, who's always great, forges a sort of tentative peace with Jason Clarke, who is not Joel Edgerton, and allows a group of humans to come in to try and restart this dam. But the process of doing that and of the two groups sort of encountering each other starts to foment like thoughts of fighting and war and rebellion among both humans and apes, leading to inevitable conflict. That's what happens.
Much like the Batman films.
The Nolan Batman films?
Yeah, the Nolan Batman films. They've decided to go straight up serious and dark with these movies. Now, the old Planet of the Apes movies, the ones I grew up on, and pretty much as a child in elementary school, once my Partridge Family obsession had subsided, Planet of the Apes moved right in. I couldn't see them enough times. I couldn't watch them on TV enough times. I watched the live action TV show. I watched the Saturday morning cartoon.
Right.
I had the action figures. I had the Planet of the Apes treehouse playset. And one of the surviving photographs from my childhood, and there are very few of them, and if I can find it, I'll figure out a way to post it, is of me being like 9 or 10 years old playing with the Planet of the Apes action figures.
Nice.
It was my big Christmas gift that year. In fact, if you look out the window behind me in that picture, it's like the snow is like up the side of the that window. Because this, when I was a child, I lived in New Hampshire. Right. Yeah. Anyway, so there was an element of goofiness, really. Not just an element. They were schlocky movies. They were half good, half bad. They were all good, all bad. They had that beautiful fusion of those two things together. Yeah,
they were schlocky and they were cool. And they, but you know, this was back when, you know, there was all.
And the more they went on, the more they were really sort of aimed at children.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
but you know, it was clearly like human actors wearing like monkey heads and hands.
Yeah,
you know, and wearing suits,
amazing latex like outfits.
Yeah.
And human clothes, and it's just such a, they're so good to watch, and I'm okay with the tone that the new reboot has adopted.
Yeah.
Here's how much of a fan I am of Planet of the Apes. I liked the Tim Burton one.
Oh, okay, that's,
yeah.
You crossed a line.
I'm sorry.
You're an apologist now.
I don't care. I enjoyed myself because it was Planet of the Apes. It's kind of the way how people who go to horror movies are like, well, at least it was a horror movie. You know, like, that's how I am.
Who's that hungry for that?
Yeah, just so hungry for apes.
I would recommend, if you've never listened to the We Hate Movies podcast, check out the episode they just did about the Tim Burton Planet of the Apes. It's pretty hilarious.
I mean, I understand that the Tim Burton one is a colossal mess and a misfire and a mistake. But come on, Paul Giamatti was an ape.
Well, they point out in We Hate Movies that he's an ape slave trader, so it's weirdly parallel to his role in 12 Years of Slave.
Yeah. I really do like the direction these films have taken. And because nobody wants to watch serious films about serious subjects starring, you know, just human beings anymore, what they need now is serious films about serious subjects starring talking digital apes. And so,
or that's a guy in a bat costume.
Or a guy in a bat costume. Or the Avengers, you know. Or we've decided that popcorn entertainment is going to be the
carrying device.
The carrying device for all of our big ideas.
Right.
And the big ideas here,
which is not necessarily new.
It's not new, but it's what we've decided is happening as a culture at this moment in history. We don't have really Westerns anymore to do this for us. And so, you know. And ain't nobody running around to see Monica Mana. In any case, I'm okay with that. The big ideas here, they come along, they get dropped. You can pay attention to them or not. Or you could just focus on apes riding horses, carrying a machine gun in each hand, and blowing everybody away. That's enough. It's so much fun to watch.
I would have liked more or bigger big ideas.
It would have made it better.
That's my quibble with the movie, was I felt like the original Apes films, at least the first one, definitely was about stuff. And even the reboot from a couple of years ago, like, you know, was dealt with some sort of larger issues.
Yes.
And this one just felt very kind of straightforward action movie. Good apes, bad apes, war, bam, go.
With some big ideas tucked away inside.
Maybe.
That they don't super...
No. And the human characters are all a big...
The nothing. Human characters are not much of anything. No. Even Jason Clarke, who I like him quite a bit. I thought he was really, really awesome in Zero Dark Thirty. And I'm a fan of his.
He hasn't quite... Like, I liked him in Zero Dark Thirty because he's playing somebody sort of like untrustworthy.
And you know how much I love Felicity.
Well, Kerry Russell has been so good on The Americans lately. Yes. I felt disappointed to see her just get very little to do here. Jason Clarke to me always feels like...
Waiting for a tape from Sally.
you know, Matt Reeves, who directed
this... never coming.
...started out writing for Felicity. And then he directed Cloverfield.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's where that
he's
all...
He's part of the J.J. Abrams
posse. I knew he was Cloverfield, but I didn't know he was
a former Felicity. Yeah. But Jason Clarke, there's something about him that always strikes me as kind of like the made-for-TV Colm Meaney.
That did not occur to me. Never has that occurred to me.
Fair enough. Okay, so enough about the monkeys and the cable car. Let's talk about the actual major film of this week.
Boyhood.
Boyhood. Richard Linklater's new film, which
is brilliant.
Yeah, I think I talked about it a little after Sundance when I sort of recapped what I saw up there.
You came home and you talked a little bit about it.
Yeah. But, you know...
You told me how great it was.
I always like to... If
that was like 6 months ago.
Yeah. If I really love a movie at Sundance, I always make it a point to see it again at sea level just to make sure that it wasn't the thin air or whatever.
You're high on no sleep and too much coffee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It holds up. It is right now my favorite movie this year, I think.
Even more than We Are the Best?
We Are the Best comes a very close second. And oddly enough, they're sort of two sides of the same coin.
Yeah, they are, really.
You know, in
terms We Are the Best is the loud version of Boyhood about girls.
Right.
So in a way, they are companion. I think
they could be a tie, really.
They could be a nice companion set.
Yeah.
And they have a lot in common. I mean, there's mm-hmm. the filmmaking style is this, you know, very naturalistic sort of
fly on the
approach.
Wall.
And, but it's... more than the fact that this is just a sweet, gentle film about growing up, about childhood, and about parenthood.
And the passage of time.
And the passage
general.
Of time, where not much by way of plot. If I had to tell you what the plot was, I'd be like, well, the kid grows up and stuff happens to him.
Yeah.
You know, normal, everyday, run-of-the-mill, going to school, hanging with friends, dealing with parents, and your mom's crappy new...
husband.
Alcoholic husband who throws things at you. That is not cool, man.
The first time I saw that, I double flinched on your behalf.
I will say my anxiety level shot up quite a bit for those kids. In the film, I was like, ooh, get them out of the house, get them out of the house, get them out of the house, and then stuff happens.
Yeah.
I won't spoil what happens, but in terms of the emotional content, it's just spot on and lovely, and it burrows into you because there's nothing to hit you over the head. In fact, narratively, there are so many loose ends where you'll leave the film going, "Well, what happened to that?" Guy, yeah. And that's all intentional.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because you know, life itself is ambiguous,
yeah.
and
it's kind of like
you
how
you don't get a lot of clear
resolution.
Cut resolution a lot of times.
It's like in Robert Altman's A Wedding, where you don't know who half the people are because that's what it's like at a wedding. It's
right.
Like, wait, who's related to who? And now that's on the bride's side.
Why are you here?
Cousin?
Who invited you? Yeah.
Yeah.
The look of the film is really amazing, too, in a way that, I mean, Richard Linklater has always, from Slacker through the Before movies, mm-hmm. And even Bernie, really, in its own strange way, he likes to fool around with narrative and with form. And
oh, yeah, I mean, look at Waking Life.
And Waking Life, yeah, too. So, like, he has a history of sort of getting in there and deciding to go in whatever the opposite direction is of what most folks would do with that
sure.
material. And he allows the images to be big and open, unless they are, you know, those tight close-ups of, you know, kid just staring off into space.
Right.
But every time there's an outside scene, and there's a lot of scenes outside, you get that great sort of wide open Texas feeling because
mm-hmm.
it's set in Texas.
Yeah, like those outdoor scenes in Tree of Life.
There's a lot that you can look at, but nothing cluttery, and that's
sure.
really really beautiful. And to have a filmmaker who trusts you to just watch without needing to constantly distract you is. It's refreshing.
Oh, and that there isn't wall-to-wall music, you know.
There is music, and it's
but
used
but
to,
it's used
it's
appropriately
to denote
and
the passage
with,
of time and what year it might be and
yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
But not it's not like a constant
yeah,
never-ending thing.
It
this isn't We Love the 2000s.
Correct. Correct.
Although he does very skillfully kind of weave in like what technology the kids are using, and you know,
right.
the internet and right. iPods, and you know, all that kind of stuff,
yeah.
and which reminded me a lot of the Tales of the City books. Like when you go back and read right. them, there's these very specific 1981 things that people were talking about,
yes.
or whatever, you know.
Anyway,
I love how much Linklater loves his characters.
That he does,
you know, that he's really compassionate to them, and he allows them to fail, but he doesn't judge them for failing.
Right.
I just
Patricia Arquette blew me away in this movie.
Oh, she's amazing.
She's so wonderful. And the big surprise, I mean, the kid, what's his
Eller
name?
Coltrane.
Eller Coltrane. He is thoughtful and observant and quiet, and so he's not an incredibly expressive young man, because a lot of the stuff that's going on in him is going on inside.
Sure.
And so you are left a lot of the times wondering how he feels about this or that. But he does a really good job of giving you face
mm-hmm.
in exactly the right moments. But the big surprise here is Lorelei Linklater.
Yes.
who is Richard Linklater's daughter.
As the older sister.
Began the film at age, what, 8?
I guess
and
so.
And finishes it at 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
And because, in case you don't know about what happens in this movie yet, they shot this film over 13 years' time.
12 years.
12 years' time.
3 or 4 days a year.
Each summer. And the film itself follows these people as they literally age before your eyes.
Yeah, and so does Patricia Arquette.
So in case you've been living under a rock inside a cave and haven't heard about what this movie does,
right.
this is what that movie does.
Yeah.
But Lorelei Linklater is so headstrong and boisterous, and just that borderline obnoxious where you're ready to tell her, can you just go to another room, please, and just get it out of your system, whatever it is you need to be doing, and then come back when you can behave like a human being again? She torments the little brother so much, and intentionally, all the way through to the end, where she will not give him an inch of room. She has to keep...
She's progressed to a certain degree of like eye-rolling tolerance, maybe. Oh, God.
She's amazing. And I read in an interview where she didn't want to do the movie when she was a teenager.
Yeah.
And just asked if they could make her character die.
Can't you get hit by a bus? That was one of the things I really admired about this movie, is that like you see these kids age for 12 years, and they age through a very... You know, not very, but a just standard awkward adolescence.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, everybody has that gawky period where they're sort of transitioning from their kid face to their adult face.
Yeah.
And it's all in there. And I have not seen that sort of kind of teen realism since, like, the old Degrassi.
Yeah.
You know? Because new Degrassi, they somehow find all these kids who, even if they're a little gawky when they start, they blossom into fashion models.
They're good-looking kids.
But the old show...
She gets out of it a lot better than he does in the whole gawky teen years.
Well, he has a big growth spurt.
Because young women, they've kind of become themselves by the time they're 20, 21.
Mm.
But guys, their bodies, men's bodies, don't stop growing until they're like 30.
Yeah.
You don't stop becoming the person you're going to adult be until you're about 30 years old, if you're a dude.
Right.
You know, when you're 19, you still look like a freak most of the time. Seriously, those college freshmen, all of them, they look like the goats in Monica Mana. Every last one of them. Unless they're, you know, a teen model, like the kids on Degrassi.
Right. So Boyhood is currently in limited release, but it's expanding next Friday, July 18th. And it is the movie to see this summer.
Yes,
you see nothing else this summer, see Boyhood.
And Monica Mana. And We Are the Best, which I just heard...
Is on demand.
It is now on demand.
It's been on demand for a while. Yeah.
Anybody can see it who wants to see it now.
So is Snowpiercer, strangely.
So is Snowpiercer now. That's cool, too. Snowpiercer's great.
So, yeah, so if you're one of the people that writes us how you live somewhere where there's never any good movies that are playing...
These films are on demand now.
Yes. And do you want to do DVD picks?
And We Are the Best has only made, like, $10 at the box office, which is annoying to me.
Yeah.
Because it's so wonderful. DVD picks.
Another of this year's best films is coming out on Tuesday, and that would be Under the Skin.
Jonathan, is that Tuesday?
Yeah, Jonathan Glazer's third film after Sexy Beast and Birth. This time starring Scarlett Johansson as an enigmatic alien with a mysterious agenda that involves picking up men and taking them to somewhere where they cease to exist. And then it takes a turn, and it's a fascinating, you give me crap for not understanding what's going on in Monica Mana and why we're doing this. But Under the Skin is a movie that doesn't really tell you anything that's going on either, and I was able to intuit, for the most part, or at least I was able to intuit my own interpretation of what's going on. Whether or not I'm right is something else, but...
If you had wanted to pay attention to Monica Mana, you would have figured out a good chunk of it by the end of the film.
Fine. Anyway, Under the Skin, DVD, it's great.
I want credit and praise right now for spending the past, I'm going to say, 5 or 6 months not saying the name Robert Bresson.
Drink.
I have not bothered y'all about Bresson in months.
You have cooled it down on
months.
That, yes.
But on Tuesday, the Criterion Blu-ray of Pickpocket comes out. Now, if you've never seen a Bresson film, this, Pickpocket, or A Man Escaped, that was a good place to start. They are the most tightly constructed of his films. And by tightly constructed, I mean there's plot. that one thing happens, and then another thing happens, and then another thing happens, and it builds to a climax. Of his films, those are the two. If you're just getting your feet wet, start with one of those. And then move on to the greatest film of all time, Hussard Baltasar. The Pickpocket comes out on Criterion Blu-ray. It has already been put out on Criterion DVD. Blu-ray, it's more blue. So... You should.
It's all about Bluetooth.
Yeah, you need to see it. It's on Hulu Plus. If you got Hulu Plus too, you can just watch the movie.
Sure.
But the Criterion is where you get all the
goodies and extras.
All the extras and the interviews and stuff. And so, you know, why didn't you get a copy of this for your column? Why not? Why did you fail me?
I explained this.
I want
to
see all the extras.
Well, then we'll just have to shell out for it. You like Bresson so much, pay the money.
All right, we have exactly 7 minutes left before we have to get out of here, because I have to go be integral part of the art world.
Of the Biennale.
Yeah. Letters. I'm going to crank them out here. Hello. I am a longtime listener and second-time writer. I wrote you guys for the first time nearly 2 years ago. I elicited from both of you a sound of either pity or appreciation, probably pity, when I stated that your podcast was the only bright spot in my Monday morning routine.
Mm-hmm.
It was pity.
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, we're appreciative of it.
No, it's great, and I'm sorry your Mondays are that crappy.
Yeah. Anyway, I have a question.
But we're glad we can be a balm to them.
I'm sure this is something that has come up before amongst the two of you, but seeing as I am the sole film nerd in my own life, I don't really have anyone to discuss it with. My girlfriend's mother frequently goes to the movies with her boyfriend, and upon returning, invariably raves about their quality. She, and this is in quotes, bawled her eyes out during God's Not Dead.
Damn.
Brr. Ugh. Tell your girlfriend to get a new mother. That's the first piece of advice I have for you. And referred to Maleficent as great. Now, I'm not gonna dispute her about Maleficent being great, because here's why. It's funny that you say this, letter writing person, whose name I have not yet read. The more I go back and think about Maleficent in my head, the more I think I like it more and more, the more I think about it. Like, when you see a film, and it's your job to see films and write about films, you have to immediately turn around a piece of writing and an opinion. And before you've had sufficient time to
really
think about it. And I'm not going to go back on how terrible I think the 3D of Maleficent was.
Well, and I think a lot of it is, a lot of the art direction is ugly.
It's busy, but there's some of it that's that's quite beautiful, and all of it is involving Angelina Jolie's, mm-hmm. you know, physical presence. But thematically, really, the story of Maleficent just has stuck with me in a weird, sort of unhappy way, where it's truly kind of an adult experience.
Hmm.
I don't know, kids are watching this movie, and it does have a child-friendly, or even, I guess, family-friendly ending.
Hmm.
But you kind of have to go through a bit of a ringer to get to that ending.
Which I think a lot of good kids' movies do.
The more I think about it, the more I want to see it again, and the more I think it may be way better. Like I said at the beginning when I wrote my review, that it was fine, that it was mm-hmm. good, that I thought it was well done, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
The good outweighed the bad, I think I said.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it may actually really outweigh the bad, mm-hmm. the more I think about it.
I haven't really given it that much thought.
Anyway, back to your girlfriend's mother who cried her eyes out of God's not dead. Other films which have received her seal of unqualified approval include the recent remake of Endless Love.
Go! Oh.
And Winter's Tale.
Oh! Come on!
Look, dude, guess
no.
what? I don't know your girlfriend, but
they do always wind up being like their mothers. And, you know? That's what people say.
And girlfriend, I don't know who your boyfriend is writing this letter, but if he's got a weird parent, he's going to turn out to be just like that weird parent. Doesn't matter what gender you are, you're going to grow up to be just like your parents. I look in the mirror every day. I catch myself doing things every day. And I think to myself, I am Lee White. There's a reason my middle name is Leland. That was his first name.
Mm.
I am Lee White.
Yeah,
in so many ways.
I catch some Fernando Seniorisms in me every so often.
Anyway, now, I understand that quality is subjective, but I don't understand why everything with her gets a pass. And I think her way of viewing movies is probably the average person's way. I remember Roger Ebert in an interview saying, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't think people know why they like the movies they like.
Well, it's true. They don't have to, you know.
Do you two think it's common for the general non-film enthusiast population to enter a movie theater and accept whatever they're giving? This seems to be the case with most of the friends and coworkers I've had over the years, unless, of course, we're talking about a challenging or unique film. The Tree of Life drew a lot of ire from my group of friends when I dragged them to watch it. Thanks for the show. It never fails to arouse me in all the right ways. Love, Kevin Roy / Jeremiah Green. I don't know. I think I added the question marks to the end of that because the email came from one name and the letter was signed by another, and I'm not really sure who's who.
Well, thanks, Kevamaya.
Kevamaya.
I think actually that's
you're absolutely spot
that
on.
Totally true. I think there are even film critics, frankly, who are of the "Hey, that was a movie," you know, kind of school. And that's really all it takes.
Are they real? Are those actual film critics, though, or are those junket people?
Well, I mean, mostly it's junket types, I think. But there are, you know.
Do you have a name in mind that you would tell me if we weren't on the microphone?
I do.
Oh, God, I got to know who this is.
You know, so, yeah.
Someone local that I know?
Well, we know of him. We are not friends.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, I think.
Could you just say it? No, you don't want to call it.
I'm not going to call it.
We aren't in that business.
No.
We're better than that.
That's right. But no, I think definitely, and I think for a lot of average folks who don't necessarily think about movies as an art form
right.
or anything but a distracting thing to go do on a Saturday, like for them, a movie is the same as lining up to go on a roller coaster. And if you go on a roller coaster and it doesn't crash and
right.
there are a few like, woo, moments, you yeah. feel like you got your money's worth. And so if it's a big Saturday night date and you've spent money on a sitter and the movie tickets and the popcorn and the soda, and then you sit in there and it's air conditioned and a movie unfolds in front of you, that's enough for a lot of people. Unless, you're right, unless you try and get into something difficult, like a close family member of mine who was recently grilling me as to why the heck I thought All Is Lost was so good.
Who was it that didn't like All Is Lost?
My sister.
Which sister?
Victoria. Not a fan of All Is Lost and didn't
know.
Did
she explain why she didn't like
it? She just thought it was boring and like, why did we care? And I was like,
did you tell her why she was wrong?
I tried, but you know, it's, again.
Does Sophia listen to this podcast?
I don't think she does.
You don't think so?
No.
Sophia, if you're listening, tell your mother that we talked about her on this podcast. No, we like to keep the family involved.
She was not having All Is Lost. And so, yeah, I think, you know.
Oh, but you know who does listen? Pilar and Ana, they listen.
And Guillermo.
And Guillermo listens.
Yeah.
We're talking about Duraldes, by the way. Hence all the Spanish names.
But yeah, so I think that's exactly it. I think people, they want to be entertained, they want to be distracted for a while, and they don't want to have the challenge of watching, you know, 2 hours of people in a cable car going up and down a hill in Nepal to sacrifice goats at a temple.
Why wouldn't you want to see that? This is my whole thing in my life, and this is why I'll probably never be a genuine populist. It's because my idea of a good time is the thing I've never seen before.
Sure.
My idea of a good time is the thing that makes me work to sort it out. The thing that I know I will never see anywhere else. The thing that doesn't bore me because I can predict what's going to happen. That's what I want. Am I an insane person for this?
Look, I see the appeal of that. I also see the appeal of going to a genre movie where you know what the beats are going to be.
Well, me too,
yes. The, you know. So, I mean, I see both sides of it. But, yeah, I want to see something that I haven't seen before, or I want to see it done in a way I haven't seen before. I mean, you know, we talked about my excitement at the moment in Locke where I realized, oh, wow, we're not leaving the car.
Right.
You know, and yeah. I had a similar one in Monica Mom. Like, oh, wow, we're not leaving the cable car. And then after a while, I was like, oh, my God, are we ever going to leave this cable car? Could Tom Hardy come sit in the cable car and talk on his Bluetooth for a while? Because that would really pick this movie up.
Well, Tom Hardy
picks up anything.
Do much. Tom Hardy can do much at almost anything he wants.
Yeah,
and I'll watch that.
So yeah, so Kevin Maya, I think you are correct. I think that
it all comes down to money. You've spent money.
Yeah,
and you feel like, oh no, did I just waste my money? No. No, I did not waste my money. This movie's fine.
I love Cam Jagandis.
I thought it was okay. It was fine.
It was in focus.
It was, yeah. I did not waste my money.
Yeah.
That's what that's about. Because if I wasted my money,
I'm the idiot.
I'm an idiot and I've wasted my life. All right, next letter. Oh my God, if you guys decide to watch Clifford, please, please, please record it as an extra episode. I remember reading Roger Ebert's scathing review when it first rolled out in theaters. It sounds truly uncomfortable and awful. I'd love it if it was a double feature with Three Fugitives, but I realized that that is unlikely. That is from Jesse. Dear Alonzo and Dave, let's face it, a podcast in which Dave grouses about having to record a podcast while on vacation is still better than most podcasts about anything. Special thanks for taking the time for your On the Road episode last weekend. That's how old this letter is. Mm-hmm. I got work ambushed, and I'm stuck inside all during a beautiful Sunday. Having a dose of linoleum knife to ease the pain makes me preternaturally smiley, like Elle Fanning. I have a theory that for Maleficent, she took beaming lessons from Jack McBrayer. Best always, Dan. From Dan Fields, from fieldspointreview.com. That's his website.
Ah.
Fields, F-I-E-L-D-S, yes. Like you're standing in a fields, point, review, all one word, fieldspointreview.com. You should go to it for him.
And read more about beaming lessons.
Yeah. We have 1 minute left. What if I read one top 10 list and we can knife it? And
okay.
Then, but then we'd super totally have to go because.
Oh, speaking of which, if you're in Los Angeles, Wednesday,
stop talking.
Wednesday night before, we're doing the Wizard of Oz sing along at Outpost.
Oh, hey there. How's it going? I do hope it's going well. It's totally going well.
Thank you for asking.
I just had these great hash browns.
Mm-hmm.
I've been listening to your delightful podcast for about a year now and consider the 52 odd hours of my life spent listening to you shooting that ish about movies time well spent. I discovered Linoleum Knife by searching best movie podcasts.
Well.
What, like on Google? Just anywhere?
Beats me.
And LK popped up on a list on some random blog.
Thanks, random blogger.
Thanks, random blog person. So, there you go. You are the best. Okay, this is really what I love the most. I love it when people just stumble on us out of the blue and
don't hate it.
And don't hate it and go, what are they? Why? Can't they just be professional?
Why are they talking about mattresses?
Yeah. You are the best, at least according to some rando on the internet. Thanks, rando.
The amazing rando.
Two quick reasons why I love your show. One is that you tend to focus on issues of gender and sexuality. Well, I think movies do.
Yeah,
and a lot of film critics don't want to talk about it.
Yeah,
I come from a very conservative town, and LGBT and women's rights have become important to me. I really appreciate how you shed light on the ways our entertainment teaches and reinforces gender/sexual norms. The other reason, and I almost hesitate to say this, is because I'm a Christian. I often pause before admitting this.
I totally
understand.
Dude,
tell me about it.
Because everybody else ruined that for you.
Yeah. I often pause before admitting this because I fear that the label Christian is being taken over by fanatical morons with terrifying ideologies of hate and growing cultural and societal clout to spread those beliefs. You're right about that. Somebody, some idiot from Victory Outreach in Eagle Rock, Los Angeles Church, just spammed the Outfest Facebook page this morning with idiotic links to his stupid church. These are the Christians that can seriously go F themselves.
But not you, listener,
who is a Christian. I really enjoy that you take the time to look at the current crop of Christian movies. Christian is in quotes.
Yes.
As it allows me to be angry at them without actually having to go see them myself.
We're here to take that bullet for you.
So thanks. I do a bit of writing myself, and I wanted to give a little plug for the online magazine I edit. I'm perfectly happy to help you with this. It's called Weather, W-H-E-T-H-E-R, not weather.
It's weather.
Although, it's
weather.
It's weather.
The weatherman.
Like cream of wheat.
Wheat. No, you remember in the Phantom Toll Booth?
Yeah.
The weatherman.
Yeah, yes. Now, let's not get it confused with weather, because weather.gov, the National Weather Service,
yes,
just one of my favorite websites, right, and I go there every morning.
But this is
with my
tea.
But this is weather, and can be found at weathermagazine.com, all one word, weathermagazine.com. It isn't solely focused on movies, but more broadly arts and culture, with particular focus on form as well as content. I think it's pretty good, and you should check it out. And without much further ado, my top 10 list, right? Because who are we as a species unless we have strangers judging our taste in things?
That's what I've always thought.
Number one, Rio Bravo. Yes. Number two, Andrei Rublev. Yes. Number three, If.
Lindsay Anderson, yes.
Do you know I have not seen If?
Oh, my God.
I know.
You're Mr. Teacher movie.
Well,
this is really more a student movie.
Yeah. The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie?
Yes.
1978's Dawn of the Dead? Yes. 1982, The Dark Crystal?
Never seen it.
Me neither. But yeah, you get a pass on it,
because
neither one of us has seen The Dark
Crystal.
And we
like Jim Henson.
And someone's going to start yelling at us now for not having
what?
Seen it.
What?
How can this be? Brazil? Yes. Crumb?
Yes.
Mulholland Drive?
Yes.
No Country for Old Men? Oh, yes. Absolutely. You're 100% knife.
You are.
Thanks a lot, fellas. Adam Klassen Bartel, Winnipeg, Manitoba. That's in Canada, by the way. Thank you, Adam.
We appreciate it.
All right. Get us out of here. I got to go.
Okay.
I gotta shower.
As always,
look cute.
We thank Blue for our lovely theme music.
Thanks, Blue.
Check out his new album, To Hell With You, and find out about all of his other projects at Bluetopia.com.
Thanks, Bluetopia.com.
Bluetopia. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com.
Yeah.
If you are a Sirius XM listener, check out the Frank DiCaro Show and
yes.
Derek and Romaine, which we were just on.
I was on last night, and I was late.
Because?
I was eating an entire watermelon for dinner, and I was in a trance.
You were in the zone.
I was in a trance of watermelon. And at 6:09, I looked at my phone. I was like, "Oh, I'm 9 minutes late!" And then
I texted you to remind you.
I know that was prime.
You were eating a watermelon.
I was eating a watermelon.
I understand. Check out Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, the B Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, the Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, and is the lunch not happening anymore?
There is no more lunch.
Oh,
you know why? Because there was no free lunch.
Yeah.
And Mr. are sad. Well, he's not sad, but it's sad that smart people can't keep having their podcasts. He painted himself into a money corner because he was buying people lunch, and he had a sponsorship. He had a funding for that lunch that was, you know, provided outside of himself.
Right.
And then that funding ended. And
I think they should rename it the Dutch Lunch. But you know,
here's what I think it should happen. I think James should now go to other people's homes for dinner. Everybody that he brought a free lunch to, they need to cook for him and podcast with him.
The dinner. Well, you know, I mean, just imagine how expensive it would have been if he'd start a show called The Luxury Yacht or something. Anyway, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, please.
The Rooftop Poolside Cabana at the London Hotel podcast.
There you go. That would be pricey.
Yeah.
Please write us a positive review at iTunes. It helps people find the show, as do apparently random blogs that are on Google.
Thanks, random blogs.
You can stream this program at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com or on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, which you should totally go like if you haven't already. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at TVTag.com. T-shirts have been ordered. So if you pre-ordered a shirt, one is on your way. And if you would like one, now would be a great time to PayPal us $20 at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. It's a Hanes Beefy Tee, 100% cotton black. So let us know your size and your mailing address. You can also PayPal us $1.99 at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com for each of our four Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes. So far, we have recapped White Christmas, The Apple,
oh God, hurry up.
Clue, and Two for the Road. And very soon, we will be taping Josie and the Pussycats, which we're very excited about. So come to Outfest this week if you're in LA, outfest.org, and we will catch you next time.
I'm not wearing any clothes. Goodbye.